Catherine Steyer. You can sign up for our updates at radioproject.org. Follow us on social media and send us your feedback and topic suggestions. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening to Making Contact. I've been your host, Anita Johnson.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We are here tonight to talk with Natalie Nicole Dressel, who is a playwright, an actress, and a performer, talking about trans identity and issues related to her work as a performing artist. So I'd like to first of all introduce everyone who's on the interview tonight. And just a reminder, we are on Zoom because it's COVID-19, so everyone is recording at home. So thank you so much for bearing with us if we have any audio technical problems. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Jean, and I also use she, her pronouns.
My name is Natalie, and I use she, her pronouns.
Great. So let's do a check-in. How's everybody doing tonight?
You know, it's a little stir crazy. Being at home is getting to me. I was doing some working from home work, but I've recently been put on furlough. I worked for a nonprofit theater company. So what we were doing was calling people to see if they wanted to renew their prescriptions without a set date of when things would happen. So it's less like selling theater and more like selling hope. And you know, some people were really into it, but some people, like, it was hard seeing where some people were at with it, because it was like you just take on their energy when you call them sometimes, and it's it can take a toll after a while. This is kind of a rough time to be checking in with people as a telemarketer.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I can only imagine, Natalie, what that must be like. I have to admit that I'm frequently not as polite as I might be with telemarketers, so in the first place. But So I'm doing okay, actually. All things considered, I have certain elements of privilege, not the least of which that I don't have to work. So that's, you know, that's made this a whole lot more palatable than it would have been. I was working. I got laid off by, you know, from it.
And then you got COVID-19.
Yeah, I got sick. Mm-hmm. I've been through all of that. So I'm about 2 months now. Yeah. Since I've been pretty much in lockdown. Although I have ventured out a few times, and just being careful. But you know, thank goddess, you know, I'm safe, warm, alive, fed, you know, I'm grateful for those things. That's how I'm doing.
And I'm doing pretty good too. I'm kind of fortunate because I'm in a profession that is considered an essential service. And so I'm actually working like more than 40 hours right now because this is my really busy time of year. I work as a caregiver for adults with developmental disabilities, and I'm also a gardener. So I feel fortunate, but I'm really feeling bad for everyone who's out of work right now. I know it's been so hard, especially for folks in the transgender community, trying to get their unemployment, trying to get healthcare needs met. I know a lot of people have lost work. I mean, I've talked to people who had like 5 jobs and they lost all 5 jobs. And so I know this is a really hard time for the transgender, non-binary, queer community. And my heart goes out to you if you are in trouble or if you need support. There are several resources available for you. You can also call Trans Lifeline. And if you really need support, you can also send us a message here at transpositivepdx@gmail.com, and we'll try to get you connected with the resources that can be of support for you. But definitely get online, look at organizations that are supporting and uplifting transgender voices, because there are people in our community that are here for you. And I'm sure you already know about all of those resources, but just in case you don't, there's tons of resources here to support you if you're in a period of economic distress right now due to the COVID-19 shutdowns. So, but on a positive note, we are here tonight. We are very honored to have a playwright, an actress, and a performer, Natalie Nicole Dressel from Los Angeles, who is someone that I met through the group Transgender Writers on Facebook. And Natalie responded to a request that I put out pretty frequently, looking for artists and playwrights and actors, anyone who's a creative person who would like to share their skills as a transgender or non-binary person. So welcome to Transpositive, Natalie.
Thank you, it's really nice to be here, thank you.
Thanks. Natalie, so let's start. We usually start most shows by asking folks to tell us a little bit about themselves, kind of like a bio. Can you, you know, give us your life story in 5 minutes or less?
Okay. So I grew up in Michigan. And when I was little, my dad died. My mom kind of went into a depression for like about 6 months or something. And it was like really hard being a kid with like sort of like a someone who's kind of like gone there. And like, I don't know, after a while my aunt came in and was like, oh, it's too sad here. We need to take everybody out. We're gonna take you all to the movies. And they took us all to see Mrs. Doubtfire, which I tell people like, please don't read into that too much. But there's a part in it where Sally Field goes, Mrs. Doubtfire, how long after Mr. Doubtfire died did it take for you to, you know, start dating again? And she goes, never. Never. Once the father of your children is out of the picture, the only solution is total and lifelong celibacy. And if you violate that, then heaven forgive you. Mm-hmm. And we all looked at my mom, and she looked at us, and we all just started laughing. And it was like the biggest, most cathartic laugh. It's like the first time she'd laughed in like half a year at that point. And I went, if Robin Williams is able to like fix my mom, like I need to learn how to do that. So it just very much became this thing where like her mood was my responsibility. And so I would be like, oh, hey, I'm Robin Leach, feel better, and that sort of thing. And it got to the point where like, well, she got married again. I was abusive in his own sort of mental awful way. My granny, who was an elder in the church, prayed for him to go away. And like he got sick and died within 2 months. We were clearing out some property for a house we were putting in. He got stabbed in the leg with a stick. He got beta strep blood infection that went to his pacemaker. And he was like, he went from healthy to dead in like a month and a half.
Wow.
So we're just like, man, someone up there listens to her, you know. She's like, if we needed a snow day, she'd pray about it and then there'd be like a blizzard. Like she's that kind of thing. So with my mom being this like eternal victim and me being like the court jester, I really edited myself for her. I was who she needed me to be for her to love me back. Because she would also say things to me like, hey, thanks for not being gay. She'd say that to me three times a year. She one time said to me out of the blue, like, you'd make an ugly woman. And I'm like, and I didn't know it hurt my feelings, but it really hurt my feelings, but I couldn't show that it hurt my feelings. So it was like a lot of weird convoluted stuff in my head. Because I had to keep it from me too, because she could like get in my head if she wanted to. We were very emotionally connected. And if I was hiding something, she always knew. So I had to bury it. It's my
what church? What church were you in?
I was in. It was a Reformed church. It was Calvinist. They were not what I would call pro-gay. But I don't remember any rabidly anti-gay sermons or anything. Yeah. But my mom did tell me that if it happened to me, then like we wouldn't get to be together in heaven anymore because gay people don't go to heaven. And I had to like work that out for a while. And the way that my little Christian brain tried to wrap my mind around it was like, no, overpopulation. Oh, God's making people gay so that we can, you know, like not completely blow up. And then there'll be more parents for the kids that need to be adopted. And I'm like, and if you don't believe that, then you hate children or something like that. So like, it's weird the kind of logic you have to do.
Where did you grow up, Natalie?
In Muskegon, Michigan, which is like on the hand, it's like right on the lakeshore.
Right.
And it wasn't like a big town, but it wasn't like a small town. But it was not like a progressive town. I've gotten kicked off my fair share of hometown Facebook groups. And that kind of does mirror the experience I had in school. Which was, you know, like constantly bullied and teased, not only, you know, for being overweight, but also for being, they called me gay all the time. And I didn't understand that because I couldn't be that, you know, I was into girls. So I didn't think that that was me. I just thought that I was, you know, raised by a mom with dads that keep dying before the macho-ness gets kicked in or something.
It's really interesting. You bring up, maybe we can get into this later, but I mean, I think a lot of trans women get called gay, and it's not unusual for it to happen to them before they transition. And it's kind of a complex conversation. I mean, that happened to me so often. And I suppose that still happens to me even now, like, you know, where people are like, well, why don't you just admit you're you're gay. And it's like, well, yeah, I'm gay. I'm a woman who loves women. That's what makes me gay. But it's like, you know, they mean it in a totally different way. And it's just, I don't know, I'm not sure. I don't think it's a subject I've even seen anyone write about, honestly. It's just, it's so nice to hear someone else who had that experience.
And it's surprising, like, how many, you know, when I talk to people in our community, how similar a lot of our stories are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mentioned that a book that I really remembered from elementary school was this book where a kid, if you kiss your elbow, you change genders.
Oh, and, that's good. I didn't
and,
know that.
And I'm like, I didn't know what it meant that I was so into it then, but I'm like, damned if I didn't spend 3 hours trying to kiss my own elbow.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Totally.
Like it,
mm-hmm.
And
I
then
do
I
that
said,
too, sure, somebody told me that.
I said that in a group of transgender women, and someone is immediately like, that's Marvin Red Post is a girl. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I mean, okay, great. So it's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Animorphs were big for me. And I heard that that's also a big thing for people who were my age growing up, not knowing they were transgender, because there was this idea of like, if you could touch something and absorb its DNA, and then you could change your body. And most of the time they did it to animals.
Uh-huh.
But there was several occasions where they'd like, like the alien touched, you know, girls and then like became a girl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh
mm-hmm.
man. And it's like, the rule was you can only do it for 2 hours and you've got to morph back or you'll be stuck that way forever. And I was like, if I had that powers, I would just stay.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay
yeah,
2 hours
totally
and 1 minute and then just be done.
Right, right. Yeah, I totally do that too, so.
Yeah.
Anyways, so you were telling us about your mom and growing up in Michigan.
Mm. Well, one of the things that sort of came up, well, because we were super close, my mom and I. Like, we were, like, because I had to sort of be there for her, we were, like, I could blow off plans with friends to hang out with my mom, and we'd stay home and watch movies, and we'd make fun of them, like, MST3K.
Oh, I love Mystery Science Theater.
Me too, so much. And we were really tight like that. And so mm-hmm. Her third husband, one time he cheated on her with this girl he met playing World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And he even like traveled to Illinois to go meet her. But she, I guess, had a boyfriend and didn't think it was as serious as he did. So he had to like drive back to his like now second metal family that he had to stick with after he tried to like upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And like when that happened, I was like so in her corner. I came down, I took my little brother out to like a meal so that they could hash things out without my little brother being there hearing the yelling happening or whatever. And I like grilled him and shamed him and, you know, was totally on my mom's side. And so there was a part of me that hoped that when I came out to her that I would get more understanding than non-understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I still did, like, I still waited to tell her. Like, I'm like, I can't talk to her while I'm in the preliminary stages of figuring this out because she will mess up my head. So I am not even going to talk about this until I have been on HRT for like 3 or 4 months.
How old were you when you started to, you know, really decide you were going to take steps, you know, toward, you know, claiming your identity as a trans woman?
Well, you know, it sort of came in waves, and it came stronger the further I moved away from home.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in college, I started to write, and like on a lark, I was gonna write a screenplay about some ex-girlfriends of mine, you know, and just be like, ha ha ha, isn't it funny? Whatever. But then I wrote a couple drafts of it, and like I was really caring about the women in the story, and I without knowing it, sort of like finding my voice through writing for women in like a really indirect way that let me do it without knowing that's what I was doing. Similarly to me joining choir in high school, not because I loved singing and it makes me cry, but because like I had to face my fear of singing. And I was a cheerleader in 10th grade, Not because like I loved cheerleading and wanted to be friends with those girls, but like because someone dared me and wouldn't it be funny? So like if you're funny, you get to have this roundabout way of getting what you need without quite understanding why you need it. It's
That must have been a great experience being a cheerleader.
My mom called me the, you know, the F word every day, like have fun at practice, you know, that. And she also like refused to drive me to a practice once when it was icy out, got into a fight with my cheerleading coach and got me kicked off the team. I had to pretend to not be that hurt about it, even though I was like kind of devastated. Moving even further away to Los Angeles, like I start to like notice that I have habits and I'm doing things that aren't for me, and I didn't quite know why I was still doing them. Like if I'd ever sit and cross my legs too femininely, I would like smack myself and adjust. And then one day I was like, why am I doing, no one here cares.
Yeah, especially in Los Angeles.
Right, yeah. I got a necklace that had a penny on it by playing street tic-tac-toe, and it was like engraved by, I guess they employ homeless people and let them engrave pennies to make money selling jewelry. And I thought it was so cool, and I put it on, but it made me feel so uncomfortable and I didn't understand why. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna leave it on. I'm just gonna leave it on and figure out this feeling. And that sort of like led to me being like, I kind of want to talk to girls about their nail polish. That's not ever something I would have felt comfortable doing, but I'm like, I love it. Like, I'm like, wow, that's really pretty. I want to comment on it. And then I'm like, well, why can't I? And it just sort of got to the point where I was getting more in touch with my femininity, and my girlfriend asked me if I thought that I might be a girl. And I've like never lied to her. At that point, we've been together like 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And I said, yeah, I think I am. And she goes, okay, don't freak out. Like on our way to work, we'll pick up a little bottle of nail polish and we'll get black so that no one can ask any questions.
So
and,
God.
And she goes, tonight when we get home from work, we'll put on nail polish together and we'll just see how that feels. And I at one point accidentally spilled the nail polish because, you know, I was not used to how you set it on a blanket at that point. And it made like a little stain that looks like a black heart on the blanket.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know if you've ever played that game Life is Strange, but sometimes like when you take a new path, there's like a physical imprint on the world that if you went back and changed something, like that imprint would leave. And I'm like, That seems like the mark of us going a new direction.
Wow, that's so great. So the person who was really your ally in making that step into transition was your girlfriend.
Yeah, she's lovely. Her name is Sophie, and we've been together now like 11, coming up on 12 years.
Oh, cool. Wow, I just love happy stories. Wow.
Yeah. Well, she realized that I'm not saying that it was easy. It's definitely not an easy thing because, you know, I got to discover my queerness. She had her queerness thrust upon her. And that is a different scenario. She didn't get to control when it happened. And she kind of had to take on a lot because not only did she have to deal with like all the feelings that I was bringing up in her, like, you know, her dad died when she was younger. And now I'm just sort of another guy leaving her in a way. So there's a lot of hardness to get over with that, but she realized that the things that she likes about me and has always liked about me were my feminine qualities, and that, you know, she had some tendencies in her past that she didn't really own because she didn't think she needed to because she was with a guy, and then she kind of re-looked at it and was like, you know what, that's me, and we've both got to like watch each other discover our identities together, and it's been kind of a really magical experience because like she's younger than me, she's coming up on 30, and I like 30 was when this all hit me, so like I feel like that's the time when you start up worrying about what other people think and just be who you are for you. Or at least that's when I got there, that's when I got hip to all that.
That's so cool. We did One of our series that we've done here on Transpositive is we did a friends and family series.
Yes.
And it was like several shows in a row. And they were all kind of stories like your story. I mean, there were stories about couples in transition, like where one partner transitioned and the other partner stayed with them, or sometimes they didn't stay with them. And we did
when I first came out and went to like some trans meetings, they were like, oh, are you still with your pre-transition relationship? Oh, that's cute. Let me know how long that lasts.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's not a common narrative. It's really not. Though, you know, frequently the separations are not, you know, antagonistic.
Right. And it's just that you become no longer that person's flavor.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that we stayed each other's flavors. But like what hurt about that is like I didn't have a narrative in pop culture or in my life.
Right. Yeah. No,
that I go, I can look ABC. At that story and go, I know at least it turned out okay for them. I didn't
That's why you're in Los Angeles, Natalie. You're the one who's gonna write the narrative.
That's exactly my mission statement. Because I don't want anyone else to go through that not having someone to like a narrative that's maybe parallel to theirs that they can look at and sort of learn some things just based on what other people are going through.
Right. You're gonna write the ABC Sunday night movie about the couple that stays together through transition and about like how it is for both of them.
I did stand-up comedy right when that first happened. I was still doing it, and I kept going.
Well, there's like, that too. Yeah.
Sometimes my girlfriend says that it feels like she's dating a whole nother person now, and I'm like, yeah, maybe that's true. But if it is true, then why do I have all of your old boyfriend's credit cards in my purse?
That's a good one. Well, that's so great. So you, your girlfriend really helped you do that transition. What about your mother? Where was your mother through all of this? Was she still around?
Well, so when I waited until I'd been on HRT a while and I was about ready to have to come out like at work and publicly, because you know there's that like I went off of social media and there was no pictures of myself in this in between period.
Yeah.
I finally like the clock was up and I sort of had to call her, and I talked to my sister first, who was like immediately like so supportive, and her husband, she wasn't sure how he was going to react, and what he ended up saying was like, hey, as long as she doesn't look better than you in a dress, I don't care. And I was like, amazing, I love you. And so, you know, we went and called my mom and I made sure my sister was there, because I didn't know how it was going to go. And I told her that I'm good. Because the minute I said, I love you, she's like, she knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, hey, I'm going to tell you something and it's hard. And she's like, just tell me. And I'm like, I am transgender and I'm transitioning. And she's like, no, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I was like, I know that this might be hard to take for you. I know dad probably wouldn't have liked it one bit if he was still alive. And she goes, well, if your dad were still alive, he would have killed you.
Mm.
And I said, well, I guess it's good he's still dead then.
Good thing he's not.
Yeah. And that conversation ended, you know, with me going, oh, I hope we talk soon. And we haven't. And then she sent me an email that was clearly trying to be reconcile with me.
Mm-hmm.
And also had clearly been like workshopped on by all the members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Like shown to everyone so they could give her notes and fix her spelling and stuff. But it went to explain why her brand of homophobia and transphobia was actually okay if you thought about it. And she ended it with, my mind is closed, but my arms are open. Which to me is like the most insulting thing. It's like, I still want you to love me and to give me everything you give me in our relationship, mm-hmm. while full well knowing I am not gonna change one iota to accept you or make you feel comfortable or anything of that matter. And I'm like, that's not good enough for me. Yeah. And she's been out of my life for over 3 years now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not an easy thing, and it was hard to get through, but she was too toxic. Like, mm-hmm. it's actually so much better that she's not in my life than mm-hmm. when she was in my life. So, I mean, it's not something where I'm sad that she's not in my life. It sucks that it has to be this way. I didn't want it. It could so easily not be this way, mm-hmm. but that would mean I would have a different mom than the one I have.
Yeah.
And that's just not what I got. So, I did a lot of work to try and forgive her for me. Mm-hmm. And the thing I learned is that you can forgive someone for you and still keep them out of your life because they're too toxic. Like,
right. Yeah.
Totally. Just because you forgive someone does not mean you need to let that abuser back in.
Right.
You just need to like let go of that anger. Like, it's like a hot coal. Exactly. Like, the more you grip onto it, the more you burn yourself. And I was like, I had been burning myself for like a full year after I was like mad about a lot of stuff with my mom.
Yeah.
Natalie, I want to offer this thought or this observation. Not always true, but frequently true for us. And that is, with time and as we kind of mature in our own identities, then folks who are a little, you know, more than a little bit spooked by our initial transitions do eventually kind of come back. I don't know, as we progressively reinvent ourselves.
Well, you know, I'm not closed to reconciliation.
Oh, yeah, no.
That requires her to apologize and acknowledge several things she will never apologize for or acknowledge. Oh, so, no, I mean, like...
Okay. I don't know your mother. I'm just saying...
I this is, like, general, like, mom family stuff, and it hurts a little because it does not apply to me.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
My happily ever after is never having to deal with her again. And I hate that people think that the good ending is getting together.
No.
No, it's not. Not with some moms.
Mm-mm. No. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. This is Trans Positive here on KBOO. Tonight we're talking with Natalie Nicole Dressel, who is a playwright and an actress in Los Angeles, who does plays about transgender issues and issues related to trans identity. And we're joined tonight with Jean and Emma. So Natalie, I was hoping that maybe at some point tonight you could share some of your work with us, and maybe this would actually be a good time to step right into that. Would you mind talking a little bit about some of your work that you do as an artist and as a writer, and maybe sharing some of that?
Absolutely. This play that I wrote a play in grad school recently called There Is Evil in This House. And that is about my childhood growing up in a haunted house. I grew up in a house that was haunted, like to the point where our church had to come and exorcise it. Things happened, like furniture rearranged, the smell of my deceased father's cologne, channels changed to like the big stuff, which is like a big large hunting knife stabbed into my bed mattress.
Ooh. I think I saw a piece of art you did about that.
Yes, you may have. So that was, you know, we had an exorcism or whatever. The church came, they had us burn a couple things, including my pet monster doll from the 80s, which I sorely miss. Didn't need to burn that toy, I don't think, but they said it was giving the demon comfort. And then they said if it didn't die down, that they'd have to fast for 3 days and call it out in the name of Jesus, and then like try to like exorcise the demon in the name of God. And but they, you know, they had to be pure of heart. So instead of doing that, they moved. and it just, like, these stories sort of just became like something I would tell at a bonfire when, you know, I was drinking and like, hell yeah, that's, you know, it's weird, you know, people don't believe it, and I don't seem like the type of person who would believe that stuff, but yeah, I grew up in a haunted house. But then, you know, moved away, came out as transgender, lost touch with my mom because of that, started to go to therapy because I thought, you know, probably a good idea to check under the hood. Mm-hmm. And eventually the ghost stuff came up, and my therapist, I thought my therapist was going to judge me, but she was like super interested, and she asked me a bunch of questions. Like one of the incidents that I'd mentioned was that my stepdad's arm got pulled behind a love seat and he couldn't pull it back out, and when he did, there was fresh human teeth marks right there by your elbow, like where you can't kiss, like from that book. Mm-hmm. My therapist asked me, where was I in the room? And I was like, oh, for that one, I wasn't in the room. And we'd told these stories a lot, and I'd kind of just put myself in a lot of them. But that one, I was like asleep. They'd just shown us a picture that they took of the bite mark.
Mm-hmm.
My therapist then—
I have to tell you, Natalie, yeah. I'm an atheist, but I love ghost stories. It's one of my favorite things, especially transgender ghost stories is like the best.
Well, buckle up, because when I told that to my therapist, she actually helped me realize that I didn't see anything happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen the furniture rearranged afterward. I'd seen the knife in my bed afterward. I'd never seen anything actually happen with my own eyes. And my therapist asked me if I'd ever thought that it was my mom doing it. And it had never occurred to me. But she totally like was like, no, you can't even bite yourself there. I didn't thought that she bit him and posed him for the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I had already not been talking to my mom for 4 months. And now I had to deal with this crazy childhood trauma thing that just came up where she may have been tormenting me and pretending to be a demon.
Yeah. Haunted house stories are the best anyway. Mm-hmm.
that's what There Is Evil in This House is about. It's about like, how do you forgive somebody who does something like that? And I'm going to just read a monologue from it. It's from a little earlier in it, but it's one of my favorites. So
great. Thank you. And what's the name of the play again?
This is the name of this play is called There Is Evil in This House.
Cool. Excellent.
Here we go. You know, scary movies are different once you've lived in one. It gives you like a point of reference then. The way that a real doctor might watch like a doctor show and go, well, that's just completely inaccurate. Like we would do that, but with scary movies. Cause like a normal viewer watching a scary movie might go, don't go down in the basement. But when we'd watch it, we'd go, why don't they just go outside and look in through the basement windows? You start to rank the movie based on the feeling that it gives you. Like, does this movie give me the same feeling I have on my own at 2 a.m., or is it mild in comparison? You even start to use the movies as shorthand to describe your own experience. Like, I'd say that Our Ghost feels like a combination of the playful ghoul from Poltergeist, the malicious demon from the Amityville Horror, with just a soupçon of the entity from The Entity. The characters in these movies, they were normal people. It was their hauntings that made them special. We see them on TV and in the movies because a ghost selected them. The afterlife got involved. You know, some people stay up nights wondering if there really is a God, but we'd stay up wishing that the devil were less real. There was no need of faith. Everything was as real as moonlight. We were haunted, but we were chosen. We were terrified, but we were special. Life felt like a movie, and we were the stars. Thank you.
Thank you. Clap, clap, clap. So that's what it's like to live in a haunted house.
Yeah, it's if a long time goes by, you start to get a little brave and be like, oh, I miss it. Things were so exciting. And then like the minute one happens, you're like, never mind. I never want this to ever happen again.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a certain amount of specialness with it. And with a kid who was like teased all the time, and you know, not especially being cared for the way that kid would have liked to be cared for, thinking that the afterlife was somehow personally interested in me, made me feel special. And the fact that I was in church, seeming like with all these people that had to have faith, when I just knew, you know, it's a perception makes our world. There are people in this world who live with real ghosts, mm-hmm. and it is real to them. And then there are people in this world who have never seen anything, and that's real to them. And for me, I've kind of lived in both of those worlds. I thought I'd seen proof of ghosts. I thought I lived in that world, and now that was all taken away from me in kind of one swoop. And now I'm a person who has never seen anything, and am maybe doubly skeptical for having fallen for it for so long.
It's a great subject for a play, though. Good luck with your play. How long is your play done? Is it completed? Are you?
It is completed. We were nearing a premiere in Los Angeles before you know, certain recent events.
Well, good luck with that. I hope that, you know, it's really interesting that we're having this conversation, because right now is like a time when there's a lot of unacknowledged death, and there's a lot of unacknowledged fear right now, not just in our community, but all around us. And it's kind of weird for it to come in the spring, you know, it's like it's spring and things are turning green and everything's blooming, but there's this really tangible fear that's all around us, you know, and it's
this is the most hopeless spring I have ever felt.
Yeah, it has been kind of depressing. Yeah. So. But it's a good time to write. If you're not filled with anxiety.
Shakespeare wrote a play during the plague.
Exactly, yes. So all you have to do is overcome your anxiety and your fear of death, that you'll die as soon as...
Easy. Easy peasy.
So, Natalie, what other experiences do you bring to your writing, as a playwright? Do you have a drama background? Are you an actress as well?
Yes, actually.
How does that play into your now authoring plays?
Well, I'm primarily an actress. My undergrad is a BFA in theatrical acting that I got from Michigan State University. I moved out to Los Angeles with the express desire to act. Once out here and, you know, transitioned, I became a little concerned about the type of parts that would be given to me. I was saying this to you earlier, Emma, about how a lot of the roles in the situations were that being trans was the problem. That seemed to be a lot of the plot, is like, oh, I'm trans and terrible things are now happening to me. And I wanted to not, I wanted representation for trans people that celebrates us as humans without necessarily having the fact that we're trans be a super huge part of the plot. Like, no more than a straight person's straightness. Anyway, you know how in season one of Will and Grace, everyone's like, I've never seen a gay person before, and everyone freaks out about it. And then like season four of Will and Grace, like everyone's used to it and they can just have like plots. Like, can we move to season four of Will and Grace with trans stuff? That's what I'm looking for. I'm writing for season four, five, and six.
I've actually met one of the writers from Will and Grace. She was up in Portland to give a talk a few years ago, and had a chance to go hear her speak. It was really fun.
Yeah,
she lives in Los Angeles.
And I get why they had to do that in that time. I mean, it was to get the people who weren't already on board used to the idea, to like get the toe in the water. Mm-hmm. But I feel like so much of the media is done with those people in mind, which does not. You know, like, it doesn't aim it at me or make me feel like I can be a protagonist, that I can be a love interest, that I can star in a romantic comedy. Like,
of course you can.
Exactly. And I'm going to write it. And I'm going to, like, if no one else is going to write for me, dang it, I'm going to write for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm doing with this this other thing, actually. Well, I do a lot of poetry, and one of the things I've done for the last couple of years at Los Angeles and Denver Pride is that I write free love poems for people on typewriters as they walk by. I'm a part of this like group called Pride Poets, and what we do is we just like have like a 5-minute like conversation with somebody, and we get to know them and their journey and their story, and we sort of like suss out like what they need a poem about, and then mm-hmm. we just kind of like freestyle it out and sign it, and then the poem is what it is, like errors and all. It's all part of the art. And
wow, that's so Bauhaus.
I know, it's so cool, and it got so into my bones that I was doing some exploratory writing for my next play that's going to be about my grandmother and her Alzheimer's, and I ended up just writing a series of poems about it. And those poems I was showing to my friends because I'm like, I'm just trying to turn this into a play. Like, this is all the emotional nuggets, but I have no idea how to like structure it. And they were like, whoa, these poems are kind of something as is. Maybe you want to look into that. So I'm kind of looking to say that this is like a play in poems.
Why don't we get to some of that? Because we've actually only got about 10 minutes left, if you can believe it. We've actually already been in this interview for over 45 minutes. So
this has flown by.
I know, it's happened so fast. But yes, could we, what is the name of the piece that you've written about your grandmother?
Right now it's just called Granny. It's a granny, a play in poems. And you know, that may evolve as the piece evolves. It's kind of I'm kind of sharing with you some newish kind of work here.
Oh, great. Yeah. I'm so honored.
Well, hey, I feel very comfortable here, so this is good.
Oh, great. Just for a station ID, you're listening to Transpositive here on KVOO Community Radio. We do programming about transgender and non-binary issues, and tonight we're talking with playwright Natalie Nicole Dressel, and she's sharing with us some of her new works and also just telling us her story of transition. So Natalie, if you could please share some of your some of your work in progress about your grandmother.
Excellent. I think what I would like to do is read two short pieces in succession. Yeah. And the first piece is a letter that I wrote to my deceased grandmother, and the second is a letter that I imagined that she wrote back to me.
Okay. Great.
Dear Granny. Granny, I am so ashamed of how I treated you in your last years. I'm so sorry. You deserve so much better. I know that you'd forgive me anything, and that is one of the things that is so special about you. Your capacity for empathy and compassion seemed to me to be boundless. But even so, you had a bad end. In an old folks' home, all alone, losing a little more of yourself every day. And I imagine you longing for us, for me, to be back home under a warm blanket with a hot cup of tea. I never, hardly ever visited you. I'm sorry. I was so mean to you. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have left you in the bathtub by yourself that day. I should have stayed. I'm sorry. I should have talked to you, even though you'd forget it mattered, and I should have, and I'm sorry, and I should have cared for you the way that you cared for me. I'm sorry. I should have loved you the way that you loved me. I am so, so sorry. I'm not sure if I'd be able to forgive me for what I did, for what I didn't do, but I still know that you would somehow forgive me, somehow understand, somehow. And there was a time when I would worry that I would be punished for this somehow, but now I see that it's me who's the one doing the punishing. I need to learn to forgive like you, so I can learn to forgive me for hurting you. Natalie.
Yeah.
All right, number two, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Dear Natalie. Dear Natalie, what a pretty name. It is so good to hear from you, especially after so long. Of course, I forgive you, sweetheart. I could never stay mad at you. And of course, I blame myself a bit, though you never would, for fading away when you needed me, but it was nobody's fault. I'm still kind of kicking myself though for abandoning you when we weren't nearly done yet. Yes, There were times when you treated me a little less than kind, but no one taught you the proper way to care for the ailing and the elderly. You had a poor role model for that with your mother, and she didn't act the way that she should have, and she passed it along to you. It was a way to keep you safe, building a wall between us. I understand. I understand that losing me hurt you horribly. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for having to go. Don't worry about my ending. That is the least important part of my life. In my mind, I was barely there. Fading into Alzheimer's is like returning to the past. There is a whole life of memories to get lost in as I sit absently in my chair. The present hardly even holds my attention anymore. I'm in awe of my old lives. A poor country child, a student struggling to lose her accent, a teen too smart for her own good, a newlywed who suspected it was too good to be true, a new mother who found new purpose in new depths of love, a divorcee who finally gets to find herself, a baker who poured her soul into her work, a singer who left it all on the floor, a worshiper who my God listened to, and a granny, my greatest achievement of all. I'm in our best moments, a greatest hits album. The new bad moments, they hardly stick with me at all. So don't worry and get about the business of forgiving yourself, because if shame is all I left you with after everything we've been through, then you weren't paying attention to how every moment we were together filled me with such joy, such light and laughter. You make my heart runneth over, my sweet granddaughter. I will always love you, Tweety Bird. Granny.
Wow. Oh, that was so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, we're on Zoom, and so I can see Natalie as she reads these pieces.
Oh, so beautiful.
And I wish you guys on the radio could see her facial expressions. She is, oh my God, what an actress.
That was amazing. Thank you
so much. Oh my gosh. Can we do another hour of this?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Oh, I love that so much. My favorite part was how, like, when you talked about your grandmother, like, sitting there with Alzheimer's, and like how we always think of people as it's so sad when they've got it, but like you're reminding us of like all of the memories of life that people live through when they're experiencing dementia and loss of memory. Loss of memory of the current moment, but they're, because my grandmother did the same thing. I remember it so well. My grandmother died about a year ago, and in the 4 or 5 years leading up to her death, she retreated more and more back into the past. And sometimes I would be sitting with her, and she would talk like she wasn't really there. She was in the past somewhere. And those past memories were like so powerful, you know, and the way that you can remember her past and like give voice to her past is so powerful. That was just amazing.
Amen.
What was your grandmother's name?
Her name was Shirley Ann Norton, and she was so, so special.
Yes, it sounds like it. And the other thing that I loved, so let me ask, do you think that your grandmother would acknowledge your gender identity?
She would. She'd honestly help me bury a body. Like, I know she'd be on board. My aunt, who I wasn't sure which way she'd go, she's totally on board, and I'm getting so much granny energy from her acceptance of me. Like, she's making sure that I get my granny's old recipes so that I can make, like, her pumpkin pie and her potato soup and stuff.
Mm. Wow.
That kind of connection with your matriarchal lineage is... just, it's so beautiful when it happens. It's yes, it's so beautiful.
I'm really blessed that I have some connections with my family that are still like, you know, not limbs broken off the tree.
Oh yeah, that whole relationship between grandmothers and granddaughters, including transgender granddaughters, is like one of the most powerful relationships there is. My grandmother just changed my life. I mean, she really changed my life, and I'm so grateful.
She showed me what unconditional love looks like. She's the reason I know what it looks like, and she's the reason I know that what I was getting from my mom wasn't enough, wasn't the real thing, because I'd felt the real thing.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's so wonderful. Is this a work in progress, or is it a completed piece
I'm
or?
kind of I've just sent it out to some old professors and some friends in the biz. I'm just getting it looked at, but it is an exploration of my relationship with her. I personify forgetting into some sort of like a goddess figure called Merk that like chews on you and works her way back through your memories, and I've also personified never forgetting, and it turns out that like that's like never sleeping, never forgiving. Net like so I think that there's a part of me that wants to call this collection Forgiving and Forgetting, but that it feels a little on the nose.
Wow. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking to Natalie Nicole Dressel. Natalie is a transgender woman and a playwright who has been working on a piece about her grandmother and some of her relationships and memories of her grandmother. Natalie, we are almost out of time. Is there anything that you'd like to share with us before we go in 3 or 4 minutes?
Thank you so much for having me. If there's anything else I would say is that everyone who thinks they're going through something alone during this time, you're so not. Every I'm breaking down every couple days. Like, we're all going through this together, and we all have a lot more in common than we think we do.
It's been such a pleasure having you share some of your life story with us. Thank you so much. Nelly, if people want to reach you or find you online, where can they find your work?
Sure. My play, There Is Evil in This House, can be found on the New Play Exchange website. If you just Google New Play Exchange, that'll come up, and I am findable as Natalie Nicole Dressel. I am on Instagram, Natalie Nicole 24601, like Jean Valjean. And I am on Twitter at Natalie N. Dressel.
Natalie N. Dressel, Dressel.
That's correct.
Okay, great. We just lost Jean. I was going to ask Jean if she wanted to say anything, but we just lost her. So I'm just going to go ahead and close out Transpositive. Nellie, it's been such a pleasure having you on. We'd love to have you back on maybe in a few months
I'd love that.
and find out how your works are going. You're in Los Angeles. You're kind of hitting, well, right now you're not, but
Yeah, I'm going to get that momentum back going as soon as I'm able to get out there.
yeah, as soon as we're all able to return to our regular life. But
Yeah.
in the meantime, we have this kind of dream world, you know, this dream world that we're in where we kind of exist electronically, you know, and it's one of the places where we can still be. So thank you so much for joining us here tonight on KBOO.
Thank you
And
for being such a good dream.
thank you. And we look forward to hearing more about your work as you continue to progress as an artist and a playwright.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Please stay tuned next for Calculated Conversation. Thank you so much, Natalie, and have a good night.
You too.
KBOO Portland.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.